Good morning. It's good to be with you guys at this part of the church here this morning. Before we jump in, we're going to be in Matthew like we have been for a while now. But I want to make you aware that there are dates for camp that are out on the Welcome Center. A few of you have been asking about those. And so those dates are out there. I know some of you are planning your summer calendar. And by some of you, I mean the moms of the family are planning your summer calendar. And so those are there for you to look at. One thing I would just encourage you, it's very likely that those dates might interact with other things on the schedule, other activities that you've got going on. But we all think that camp is just such a good thing for kids that I would just encourage you to choose camp over other things that you have going on. That is a possibility. I know that is radical thinking, but Jesus talks about that somewhere, I think. And not only that, we have an example. A middle school student, a parent was just telling me the other day, a middle school student here was planning on doing an activity at their school that was going to require them to miss a lot of youth group on Wednesday night. And they came home from church that evening and told their parents, hey, I want to put God first in this area, and so I don't want to do this activity anymore. I want to give that up for this year at least, you know, and keep going to youth group. And so if you do make that decision with your child, you're not alone in that. There are others who are doing that. And so I would just encourage you in that way. We're going to be in a few different places in Matthew. We're going to jump around a little bit today. We're going to start in Matthew 14, in verse 13 specifically. And these four passages we're looking at are joined together by this common theme of bread. The writers of the Gospels didn't just write random stories about Jesus. Oftentimes they wrote to a specific group of people, and so they had a specific point that they were trying to get across. And oftentimes they would lump these stories together, and Jesus would teach in this way where he would use a word or use an idea to group these things together in order to get his point across. And so we're going to look at the story of the feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of 4,000 at a different time, an occasion where Jesus kind of explains what he hopes to get across to the disciples through those miracles that he did, and then one other story of a Gentile woman, just that Jesus uses bread to kind of illustrate something with her. And so starting off, we're going to just look at the story of the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus is with his disciples, and John the Baptist has just been beheaded. And so Jesus is trying to go and find some solitude for himself. He goes off with his disciples just hoping to find some kind of peace with just them. But oftentimes when Jesus tried that, it didn't really work because people were drawn to him. And so whenever he left, crowds would just follow him wherever he went. Or if they figured out where he was going, they would just show up. And so Jesus didn't cast them aside. You know, as the crowd gets there, he has them gather around, and he begins to start teaching them. And it's getting late into the day, and as he's teaching, his disciples begin to get worried because they come to him and say, Jesus, we're far away from town, and there's nowhere for these people to go and get food. We need to send them away before it gets too late in the day. And Jesus responds to him, to all of them, with this in verse 16. It says, they don't need to go away, Jesus told them. You give them something to eat. But we only have 5 loaves and 2 fish here, they said to him. Bring them here to me. And so the disciples realize at this point, there's this huge crowd. There's 5,000. The text just says men. There were also women and children. So we really don't know how many people were there. And they recognize within themselves, we don't have what it takes to feed these people. Like, we have nothing to offer these people, and we're in some trouble. And so they bring this request to Jesus, and he has them bring all the food that they have with them, which is just 5 pieces of bread and 2 small fish. Really, this is probably just a snack for one person. The bread and the fish, these aren't like full-size fish or even a... It says loaves in the text. It's not, you know, like a loaf of bread. This is just a snack for one individual person. And they bring it to Jesus, and he takes it, and he He blesses it and thanks God for it, and then they begin to distribute the food out to all these people. They've had them sit down in groups, and they're spread out all across the plain, and they just start giving out food, and it keeps coming, and it keeps coming, and the text says that everyone ate enough food that they were satisfied and full, and not only that, they picked up extra food after that. There were 12 basketfuls that they were able to collect everything that was left over. Very similar, the next story, Jesus is again out in the wilderness trying to find some solitude and trying to find some just time where he can rest and not have to be ministering and giving himself over to people. But once again, the crowds come and they find where he's at and they go out to him. And this time he performs some miracles. He starts healing the lame and the blind. And it begins to get late in the day again, just like in the other story. This is in Matthew 15, verse 32. But one thing that changes here is that the disciples don't come to him worried about the fact that the crowd doesn't have food. This time, Jesus brings it up to them. And I think he's trying to figure out if they've learned anything from just a little while ago when he fed the 5,000. Jesus called his disciples and said, "I have compassion on the crowd because they've already stayed with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry, otherwise they might collapse along the way." The disciples said, "Where could we get enough bread in this desolate place to feed such a crowd?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Seven," they said, "and a few small fish." So once again, very, very similar. The number is different. The number of bread, loaves of bread is different. But the problem is the same. This huge crowd has a need, and the people come and realize we have no way to fulfill this need for them. And this time when Jesus asks them, they still are like, "We're out of ideas. We don't know what to do. We don't have enough food for these people." And you can't blame the disciples for their lack of faith and their own ability. I mean, I think we would all be in the same situation. We would probably all have the same thoughts that I don't have anything to offer these people. There's nothing I can do to feed this large group of people. The problem with the disciples is that they don't have anything to offer, but they forgot that they're with the one who has everything to offer. They're with Jesus who can meet their physical needs. He can meet their spiritual and their emotional needs. Every need that the crowd has, every need that you and I have, Jesus can meet those needs. And the disciples have lost sight of the fact that they're with the one who can provide everything for them. This morning, I heard a few people talking about it. If you got the newsletter, you might have seen some dates on the calendar or an article about an event that we're doing in the fall. We are going to have a corn maze and fall festival with other activities that are going on here at the church. And we are just in the very beginning stages of planning that. There's not a whole lot of details ironed out with that. But over the last few weeks, as we've been trying to plan about that and look towards that, we're excited. We think it's an awesome opportunity to get, you know, potentially thousands of people here. It's going to be a month-long thing on Saturdays that we do. And so we're really excited to offer that to families in the community. And we think it could be an amazing outreach. But I will be honest with you, there have been moments, multiple moments, in my office as I'm sitting here thinking about that, that I've thought, this is a terrible idea. Like, what are we thinking? Because I don't know how we're going to pull this off. The logistics are difficult to work out, and the amount of effort it's going to take on really all of our part is a little bit overwhelming sometimes. And so I've had moments where I'm thinking, God, this is crazy. There's no way we can do this. But that's kind of the point. See, sometimes we're like the disciples and we get to think, I don't have anything to offer. Like, how can this possibly happen? But as a church, we're taking a step of faith and thinking, yeah, we're in that boat. Like, we have nothing to offer the crowd. We have nothing to offer the community. We have nothing to offer our friends and family. But we know the person who does. And so we're going to point them to him as much as we can. And so I just ask that you would pray about that event that's coming up. It is months away, but it's going to take a lot to get there and a lot to get those things ironed out. And the reality is that we believe Jesus is going to be in that he's led us to that, and he's going to help get that done. And if he doesn't, we're in trouble, which is a good thing. And if he's not a part of it, we don't want to be a part of it anyway. And so we have to quit thinking of our own ability to offer things to people and rely on the one who has everything to offer. I'm going to read a passage from Isaiah. This is chapter 40. It just highlights the attributes of God and who that person is that we rely on. It's a little bit lengthy, but just bear with me if you would. In verse 12 of chapter 40, it says, "Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or marked off the heavens with the span of his hand? Who has gathered the dust of the earth in a measure, or weighed the mountains on a balance, and the hills on the scales? Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord, or who gave him counsel? Who did he consult? Who gave him understanding and taught him the paths of justice? Who taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding? Look, the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are considered a speck of dust on the scales. He lifts up the islands like fine dust. With whom will you compare God? What likeness will you set up for comparison with him? An idol? Something that a smelter casts and a metal worker plates with gold and makes silver chains for? A poor person contributes wood for a pedestal that will not rot. He looks for a skilled craftsman to set up an idol that will not fall over. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not considered the foundations of the earth? God is enthroned above the circle of the earth. Its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like thin cloth and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He reduces princes to nothing and makes judges of the earth like a wasteland." Two final verses here. "To whom will you compare me? Who is my equal? Ask the Holy One. Look up and see who created the stars and brings out the stars by number. He calls them by name. Because of his great power and strength, not one of them is missing." And that is the God that we rely on. We have nothing to offer, but that is the God we serve, and that is the God that we can point people to. So these feedings happen, and a little bit down the road, Jesus is with his disciples, and they begin to complain again that they're in this boat, and they start to get hungry, and they begin talking about how they don't have any bread to eat. And Jesus uses this opportunity to try to get this point across to them and teach them something about what has just happened with the feeding of all those people. The disciples reached the other shore, and they forgot to take bread. Then Jesus told them, "Watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." They were discussing among themselves, "We didn't bring any bread." And aware of this, Jesus said, "You of little faith, why are you discussing among yourselves that you do not have bread? Don't you understand? Don't you remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many baskets you collected? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many baskets you collected? Why is it you don't understand that when I told you, beware of the Pharisees and the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, it wasn't about bread?" What he's talking to them about is their teaching. He's telling them to be aware of what the Pharisees and Sadducees try to get across to you. And that teaching is all about works. That's what the Pharisees and the Sadducees cared the most about. They thought that if we just did enough and if we followed all the rules, that would be good enough to offer something to God. And what he warns them of is just like leaven or yeast, a little bit of it spreads throughout the whole loaf of bread. That false understanding, that false teaching of works will penetrate and spread throughout our thoughts and start to affect what is true, and that is that our works mean nothing to God. there's nothing we can do to please God, to earn our salvation in that way. There's nothing that we can do to earn God's favor. There's a story a man told of, he adopted a daughter, and this particular daughter had been adopted by a family beforehand, but it didn't really work out. She never really fit into their family very well, it seemed like, and so they absolved that adoption, and this man and his wife brought her into their family. And he wasn't sure of the circumstances, but one thing that happened in the past was this family that she was a part of before, whenever they would take their kids to Disney World, they would take their biological children, but this adopted daughter, they would always leave. And he came to understand that it was because she would act up. As the trip approached, she would do something, and so they tried to use it as a punishment. But really, it just kind of taught her and made her think that, like, I'm just not good enough. I can't be good enough to earn this trip. And so as the man found this out, he's like, all right, the next time that work takes me in the area of Disneyland, like, we're going to take the family and go on this trip. And so they set this trip up, and weeks before the trip happened, he noticed a change in his daughter. She began to act out in ways that she never did before. She started telling lies when it was just so much easier to tell the truth. And she started just whispering insults to her older sister that were, you know, just really cutting and hurtful things. And he didn't understand what was happening. And so one day he finally sat her down and, you know, tried to have this conversation about why are you acting this way? And throughout the conversation, she said, like, you're not going to take me to Disneyland, are you? And he admits he was tempted to say, well, if you keep acting like this, then no, I'm not. But instead, he said, are you a part of this family? And she said, yes. And so he said, okay, well, then the family's going to Disneyland, and so you're going to go to Disneyland. And he thought and hoped that would make her start behaving, right? That she had this confidence that she wasn't going to get left behind this time. But even on the road trip to Disneyland, she was still acting out and at the rest stop still just misbehaving, and he couldn't figure out why. And they even went through the whole first day at the park, going through the rides and seeing the princesses and everything, and she still just wasn't acting like she normally did, and until they got back to the hotel and he finally saw that she was starting to understand that she was part of this family and that she was not going to have to miss out on this opportunity anymore. And so he began to get ready for bed and put her away, tucked her in the sheets and everything, and he prayed with her, and he said, man, I'm just so glad that you're here with us. And she closed her eyes for a minute, and he thought she was going to fall asleep, but she opened her eyes and said, Daddy, I'm glad that I'm here, not because I'm good, but because I'm yours. And that's the way that God is with us. Nothing we can do can earn us into the kingdom, whether it's the magic kingdom or especially God's kingdom, right? Our works are not good enough. We have nothing to offer that God will accept and say, yes, you can be a part of this family. But by grace, he just brings us in to part of his family, not because we've earned it, but because he is good and because he loves us. And the problem sometimes is, just like this story, I think it's easy to get in the mindset of the Pharisees, though. It's easy to think, man, I'm glad I had 5 loaves and 2 fish, or else Jesus wouldn't have been able to feed those people, right? Which is ridiculous, because had they not had that food, Jesus could have fed the people. Like, the fact that was in front of them had no bearing on whether or not Jesus was going to feed the crowd or not. I mean, he made the world and the whole universe out of nothing. I think he could feed a few people, whether or not he had bread to start with or not. But we tend to get in that mindset where we think, man, it's a good thing I'd put money in the offering plate. Not sure what the church would do without that. Or it's a good thing I showed up to be on the worship team or teach my class this morning because we really need it. And we're grateful for all of you that serve. We're grateful for your knowledge. We're grateful for your offering. We're grateful that you teach and that you serve and greet in so many ways. But please understand, God doesn't need that. If Kevin or I both left, the church would be fine. God's kingdom would still advance. This church would continue. It was here long before we were, and it will be here long after we're gone. And we don't have anything to offer to the community or to God as far as our works go, except to point people to him, because he has everything to offer. There's one more account. Jesus has kind of ended his ministry to the Jews, and he is beginning his ministry to the Gentiles. This is in chapter 15, in verse 21. Jesus is out amongst the crowds, and this woman comes up, and she begins to just cry out to Jesus and ask that he would heal her daughter. And at first, Jesus just kind of ignores her. He doesn't even say anything to her. But she keeps kind of hounding him and keeps just crying out, like, Jesus, help me. I need you to heal my daughter. And finally, the disciples come to him and say, hey, would you, you know, help this woman and send her away so that she'll go away? And this is Jesus' conversation with her. He says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But she came, knelt before him, and said, Lord, help me. He answered, It isn't right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Yes, Lord, she said, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. Jesus replied to her, woman, your faith is great. Let it be done for you as you want. And at first, this seems so counter to how Jesus normally acts. He ignores her at first, and then he calls her a dog, which is in any culture is not a compliment, just so you're aware. But really, the tone of what he's talking about is he understands this woman's faith, and he's just seeing, like, what extent is she going to go to reach out to me? And he knows that she's going to respond in the right way, I think. And so he points out that my ministry is first and foremost to come to the Jews. And this is really the turning point where he begins to reach out to the Gentiles. And what's amazing about this story is that when she comes, she calls him Lord. She uses terms that other people have not used up to this point. See, all the Jews have kind of missed who Jesus was. But this woman finally comes along and she understands. She knows who Jesus is. And there's only two times where Jesus responds in the way he does when he says, woman, your faith is great. And that is to this woman, and another time to a centurion soldier. And so it is a remarkable show of faith on her part. And Jesus recognizes that and says, man, I am so impressed by your faith. Yes, I will do what you want me to do. And there's one big difference between this woman and the disciples. And there's a big difference between this woman and the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The disciples realize we don't have anything to offer, but they forget that Jesus does. The Pharisees and Sadducees think we have everything to offer. We follow the rules so well. In fact, the Pharisees and Sadducees, they were so over the top with their rules that they had something called the Mishnah. And so the Old Testament law was pretty rigorous and hard to follow anyway. They would add oral laws on top of that. And so there was the commandment given that you're to keep the Sabbath day holy. Basically, that's just saying, have a day of rest, focus on God. It's as simple as that. The Pharisees and Sadducees, though, they would take it a step farther. And they added 39 other rules just to that one alone. And it started off being this case where, well, we don't need to break the law. And so if it's here, we need to make sure we don't even get close to it. That way we don't just accidentally break it, right? So they had rules about how many steps you could take on the Sabbath day. And after so many steps, well, we've broken the law. That's no good. That's how much they relied on their works. It would be similar to this, that Interstate 49 is speed limit is 70 miles an hour. And so that's the law. It's as simple as that. 70 miles an hour is the speed that you need to drive at. But what the Pharisees would do is they would say, well, actually, you need to drive 65, because if your speedometer is off a few miles, you know, you don't want to go 71 or 72. That'd be bad, you know. You don't want to break the law. And so make sure you drive 65 just in case. And not only that, you need to set your cruise control. You know, it's not just a necessity. It's something you have to do. So there's another law. We know that the radio is distracting sometimes, and so you need to make sure that the radio's off. That way you're focused on the road. And other passengers, too, we know how much they can distract you. And so just don't have any conversations with other people that are driving in the car with you. Make sure it's just quiet and you're focused. And so they would add all these rules, and they were so focused on that they thought, man, if we just do all these things, that God will be honored through that. And he'll see how good we are, and he'll accept us. And then they would take it one step farther, and they would say, this isn't actually a rule, but because we're so good, we're also going to drive with our hands at 10 and 2, because we're just better than everyone else. But the Gentile woman was not like that. She understood that she didn't have anything to offer, but that was okay. Because if you think back to this conversation, Jesus basically tells her, you're not good enough, you're not worthy enough to accept what I have to give you. And the reason that he commends her faith so much is because she says, I know. Like, I know that I'm not good enough for you to give me what you have to offer. But I know also that you're that good and you're going to give it to me anyway. Church, may we never forget that's who we are. When we have nothing to offer God, he still gives us everything that he has beyond what we deserve. Have you guys ever seen a child start to help their mom and dad maybe carry something or do something that they really can't help with, but they just want to be there? I see this a lot whenever we're maybe having an event in the multi-purpose building. We're breaking down tables and chairs and everything, and maybe a little kid will come up and carry the table with their dad, and really their arms are outstretched and they're barely touching the table, but they think, oh man, I'm helping out, and really the reality is that they're probably in the way more than they're helping, right? I mean, maybe you don't want to trip on them or something like that, but what's so cool about that is when that happens and they come and they grab onto the table and they're walking along with their dad and whoever else is carrying it, the dad doesn't say, you can't help me. You don't have anything to offer. Like, just go away. That's not what the dad does, right? The dad says, thanks for the help. Not because they're actually helping, but because the dad just wants to be with his kid. And when we don't have anything to offer God, and when we don't have anything to offer to the community, God says, hey, come along, I just want to be with you. God, thank you so much for grace. Thank you for Jesus. And man, God, we're just so grateful that you treat us better than we deserve. God, help us to remember that we really can't offer anything to you. But we know the one who can offer things to people, and just help us to point people to you as much as we can. God, thank you for Jesus' willingness to go to the cross and just making it possible for us to have a relationship with the Father. God, we just ask all these things in his name. Amen.